Today on the 21st, we're headed back to school. Continuing our education coverage this week, first, there's a new state law that will require all schools to provide programming for gifted students. We'll also ask teachers what they wish more parents knew. Want to join our conversation? Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. And
everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome.
If you haven't heard of the first Lego League, you probably should, because it's an international competition with hundreds of thousands of students participating, and a team of students from Central Illinois is one of the best around. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Coming up this hour, the Peoria Journal-Star's executive editor joins us to talk about why his newspaper is joining with more than 200 other publications around the country tomorrow in a coordinated editorial stand to defend the right of a free press. We're also continuing to have conversations this week about education, as many of you are getting ready to send your children back to school or maybe go back to school yourself. Yesterday, we talked about kindergartners. Later in the hour, we're going to be joined by a panel of teachers from across Illinois. We're calling it What Teachers Want Parents to Know. Are you a teacher who wants to join in by phone to give advice, or are you a parent with a question? You can give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455, or tweet us. Our handle's 21STShow. But first, there's a new law on the books in Illinois that requires all schools to have systems in place to identify and advance or accommodate academically gifted children of all ages, and it's called the Accelerated Placement Act. As of July 1st, schools in Illinois are now required to have this in place. It's part of a statewide effort to make sure all districts have a way to address the needs of students who would benefit from some form of acceleration, whether that's attend special classes or, in some cases, even move up a grade. Skipping grades used to be a common strategy to keep bright children engaged, but today, according to a recent report by researchers from Johns Hopkins, just 1% of students jump a grade level. Joining me now to talk about why students might still benefit from advancing early and what this might mean for schools is Josh Dwyer with the educational advocacy group Empower Illinois. On the line from our partner station WNIJ in DeKalb is Elsa Glover. She's a teacher and instructional coach at Canelin High School in Maple Park. And with us from Collinsville Community Unit School District 10, just outside St. Louis, is Superintendent Bob Green. All of you, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Josh, I wanted to start with you. This Accelerated Placement Act went into effect over the summer, but now that school's starting, we're all going to get a chance to see these changes. What's the point of the act?
The point of the act is really to have kids be in the educational environment that's right for them. The way I usually put it when somebody asks me is, it doesn't make much sense for a sixth grader to be in a sixth grade math class if they're operating at an eighth grade math level, right? It makes a lot more sense for them. It makes a lot more sense in general for society to want them to be in an educational environment where they're going to be challenged, but where they're also going to thrive.
And is this just for academically gifted children then?
It's not just for academically gifted children. It's for advanced learners. I know that's a little bit of a that may strike people as kind of confusing, but when you're labeled as gifted in the system, there's a specific way of doing that. But some kids are just advanced. They may not be labeled as gifted by their district. They'll benefit from this too.
And how did, for kids who do have the label gifted, how is that determined?
So it's determined a number of different ways. In some districts, it's done by teachers, and they'll identify kids to then be either put in a gifted program or given an assessment. In other districts, they have something called universal screening, where the year prior to a gifted program being started or acceleration taking place, they'll screen all kids in a particular grade. In terms of best practices, usually universal screening is acknowledged as a best practice.
Superintendent Green, I mentioned you are in charge of Collinsville Community School District 10. That's just outside of St. Louis. How does it work for, as Josh is telling us, whether they're gifted or advanced learning students in your district?
Well, pretty much. We do universal screening, and then according to our policy, we'll have a period in the spring where a window is open that a parent may request that their child be evaluated, including some testing that we provide, to see if they could possibly advance. And if they meet the criteria and the committee approves it, then that particular child may be advanced one or two grade levels.
And how do you measure students to see if they're the right fit to skip a grade or two?
Well, what we look at, we looked at the University of Iowa when we were first looking at this to see if there was any data out there. And there were a few programs around the country, but we really liked what they did. They had some hard data to look at. They also had social-emotional scales that they looked at. And then surveys of their teachers and other care providers to assess the emotional, social aspect of it. And we look at as much data as we can and then determine if that's a correct placement for that child or not.
Elsa, I wanted to bring you into this conversation as well. As I mentioned, you're a teacher and you're an instructional coach at Caneland High School in Maple Park, that's just east of DeKalb. When we're talking about students being accelerated by a grade, I think obviously our system is set up for grouping children by age. Do you feel like it might make better sense to think about in some cases, grouping children by ability?
Well, yes, I do. I think it helps all of us to think about the fact that schools have been organized by age for the last century or so. And as we start looking at kids and their abilities and where they are proficient in certain standards, it may be better and it may fit each kid better to allow them to move within school according to what their capabilities are and their intelligence is at that moment.
And what has been your experience as you've seen students who have done this within your school, Elsa?
Well, I've had the luxury of being able to teach a gifted class versus teaching a class where I have gifted students, what you would term regular education students and special education students all in the same place. And it gets kind of hard to be able to provide that just right fit for each of the 30-some kids that may be in that class. So if you have the time and have the ability to push those gifted kids into a realm where they are finally challenged, they become much more interested in learning, their social-emotional growth will be better, they'll feel more confident in themselves, and they'll be able to do things that really fit what they're excited to learn about.
And Elsa, you're talking about at the high school level, correct?
Middle school and high school.
Middle school and high school. Superintendent Green, I wonder, do you also do screening at the elementary level, or what do you all do?
That's where we start our program. When students are coming into kindergarten or first grade, that's where we look at that. At the high school, we also have programs where we place kids at the local junior college. We also have AP classes, which are advanced placement courses that are taught on site. So we try to do as much as we can to encourage our students to reach that level, that next level, and continue to excel and move forward.
Superintendent, when we're talking about children skipping grades, I think there might be people who think, oh, this is not good for children, even if maybe academically they're advanced, socially and emotionally they're not. I think that sometimes people think those things. How do you all determine if this is a good fit for the child? I imagine this is a conversation with their families as well.
Well, certainly that's part of it. And there is no one size fits all. It's been my experience that some children may be bright and gifted, but they're not emotionally ready to move forward and interact with kids that are 2 or 3 years older than them. So to me, that's a serious consideration, and that's something that we strongly look at. We also monitor the kids that do get great acceleration and make sure that they are fitting in socially. And if there's any problems, then we try to alleviate that. But so far, we haven't had to bring anybody back. The kids have all thrived and gone forward.
And you were one of the first districts to have this institute these policies in Illinois. How long have you been doing this, Superintendent?
I believe this is our sixth year.
Okay, so,
but,
yeah.
You know, my experience as a superintendent, I was in another district in another state, and we had middle school students that would go to the high school to take advanced courses. And then in a couple of cases, we even had middle school students going to the local college and, of course, high school students. So the idea of giving kids the appropriate level is not new. It's just been how to implement it. And, you know, educators have looked at this for a long time. Dr. Guskey out of Kentucky, I believe, made this, in the education forefront back 20, 30 years ago when he talked about, you know, students performing and then once they master the material, what level do they go to? And, you know, our problem, as I see it in education, is we've been slow to respond to that. So these are attempts that we feel are beneficial to the student and recognize the differences in levels. And we try to get it implemented. And so far, we're pleased with the results.
I'm speaking with Superintendent Bob Green from Collinsville Community Unit School District 10. Elsa Glover's also on the line with us from DeKalb. She teaches at Caneland High School in Maple Park. And Josh Dwyer's also with us with Empower Illinois. Josh, how does the funding work for this? Are districts supposed to fund the screening and put these systems in place themselves?
So in the law, in particular, the way it's written, there's not a really a required assessment that has to be used, though I know there are recommended ones. The Iowa Skills assessment is probably the most well-known. It's called the Iowa Acceleration Scale. But I think, you know, the superintendent can probably talk to the cost more than I can because he runs the school district. So I think, you know, he can tell you probably exactly how much it cost to book. From what we've heard, it's a very low cost intervention to meet the needs of these students.
Superintendent?
Yes, I'd say that's correct. We initially invested about $200 to get the Iowa test and the materials and to do some training and then as needed we buy more forms or whatever. So it didn't require any additional staffing. So there was no expense there. The biggest thing we had to do was change people's attitudes. You know, you try something new, and it's, well, we've never done that before, or it can't be done. And we've proven that, yes, you can do it. And even though it hadn't been done before, it can work. So we're very pleased with our program and how it's working. And I think the parents would agree with that, and so would the staff.
Elsa, to Superintendent Green's point about having to change minds or reset expectations or the culture around this, for teachers or for districts who may be putting together these acceleration policies for the first time, what do you think is important for them to keep in mind?
Well, I think that you have to remember that this is all about helping kids reach their potential. And each kid is going to need something different, and their parents are going to need a hand in this as well. And so as districts are starting to think about how do we reach all of the kids with the staff we have, with the materials we have, we're going to have to really be conscious of thinking outside of the box and trying things and making sure that everybody's aware of what's happening. Kids oftentimes, as they move into a new situation, they might need some more social-emotional help making sure they feel comfortable, but not just the accelerated students. It's the students who are going to be meeting these younger students in a new environment where they might not be so certain about having younger kids with them. It's getting an understanding that this is all good and that age isn't the thing that we should be grouping kids by.
And I wonder, Elsa, what you think parents should keep in mind if they're interested in this.
Well, as a parents need to think about, you know, how much stress this student is going to put upon themselves. You know, oftentimes gifted kids are those kids who are perfectionists, and oftentimes we can see anxiety come out in them as they start into a new program or as they start trying to show perfection at a higher level. And I've seen a lot of kids struggle with wanting to be absolutely perfect at their work at school and at all of their activities they're involved in. And I think parents oftentimes need to remember to help them set limits of where, you know, where their work should be done or how much time they're spending doing their homework so that they do have some time to be kids and have fun at that as well.
Superintendent, what advice do you have for parents?
Well, as I told you the other day, every parent and grandparent believes their kids and grandkids are gifted, and I'm no exception to that. But the reality of it is not everybody falls into the labels that are called gifted, but there are a lot of kids out there that have strengths in different areas, and we try to focus on that. And technology is another great tool that we use to help enrich and maybe take the child beyond. And as we, you know, work through this and determine how we can better focus on each individual student with the system we have, we'll continue to make gains on this. But I'm excited for the future with what we've in this area. I think we've got the potential to do a lot of good things in education, you know, for all children, not just the gifted.
Right. And that's what quick last question. We're almost out of time, but Josh, if you could just give me a yes or no, do you think this is something that benefits students in all socioeconomic brackets?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. That's Josh Dwyer with Empower Illinois. Elsa Glover has been with us as well. She's a teacher at Caneland High School in Maple Park, just east of DeKalb. And I want to thank Superintendent Bob Green for being with us as well. He's the superintendent of Collinsville Community Unit School District 10 in Collinsville, Illinois, just outside St. Louis. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thanks for tuning into The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. It's back to school week here on the program. As you've been hearing this week, we've been having conversations about education as many children are headed back to school. And who better to talk to, though, than some teachers? We often focus on new laws and policies aimed at improving the educational experience for kids, or we hear from families about their needs in school. But what's often lost in these discussions is what teachers need. And so today we wanted to give teachers the floor, and we've assembled a panel of teachers throughout the state to do that. Joining us from Dwight, just south of Joliet, is Lindsay Jensen. She's a high school English teacher. Another high school English teacher at Williamsville High School near Springfield is Mike Goodwin. Lindsay Dickinson is on the line from Bloomington, where she's the Unit 5 Education Association President. She also teaches 8th grade math. And here in studio with me here at WILL is Mark Sikora, who teaches social studies at Centennial High in Champaign. All of you, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
We want to hear from these teachers, but we would love to hear from you. If you're a teacher who's listening or if you're a parent who has questions, you can always join our conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21STShow. Lindsay Dickinson, I'm going to start with you. You've been teaching for 10 years in Bloomington. Can we go back to when you were first in the classroom, when you were first teacher, when you were first starting out teaching? What surprised you the most?
I would definitely say that the thing that surprised me the most at first was how eager all of my students were to get to know me as a person and a human, and that, you know, I'm a teacher and I don't just live in the closet in my room. I actually do have a life outside of school. So being able to interact with a lot of my students and then in turn also be able to interact with a lot of my families, that was probably the most exciting thing walking into my first class the first time.
And Mike, what did you find? Were you, I wonder, when you think about teaching, how much of time as a teacher do you spend preparing for tests that students have to take or testing?
You talking about standardized testing?
Yes.
Quite a bit. It takes up, I mean, not much day to day, but there are chunks of time when the tests are coming up that you have to devote to giving them the strategies to succeed in those tests. And depending on the test, they have a huge impact on the student's future. So we do spend quite a bit of time prepping them for those exams.
Mark, do you as well?
Not so much in my discipline, because standardized social science in and of itself isn't really on it. So the focus on math and English. But certainly we're told a lot about the skills that we need to get across to the kids in the curriculum that we have. And so like a lot of things, if enough people tell you that it's high stakes, then we certainly take that upon ourselves, and we have to keep that in the back of our minds.
Lindsay Jensen, you're speaking to us from Dwight, where you teach high school English, and you were actually awarded Teacher of the Year by the State Board of Education. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What do you think is the biggest misunderstanding about your job?
Well, I think a lot of people have obviously spent time in classrooms, and so they think they know how a classroom should function or what a classroom should look like. But, you know, teaching is more than just loving kids. That's the easy part of our job. There's a lot more that goes into it, you know, content expertise, methodology, pedagogy. And teachers are truly experts in what they do. And I think that teaching as a profession is such an important job. I mean, we are in the business of human beings. We're helping students recognize who they want to become in this world. And there's just no greater honor than teaching my students. And I take my job very seriously.
Lindsay Dickinson, what other misconceptions are out there about teaching that you want to dispel?
I would definitely say that, you know, I agree with what Lindsay Jensen said. She's completely spot on. And I would also say that being now in the times that we're in, where we have cell phones in our hands and we have access to social media and email and all of these things, that we don't live on them. And we spend, you know, our eight contractual hours with students, engaging with students, teaching students, mentoring students. And I would think the biggest misconception is that we're going to be able to respond to requests from the community or parents or other students or things right away, when our time is being taken over by what our job is and what our profession is of educating students.
Mark, I see you smiling in here when Lindsay mentioned communication. What's your best advice for parents when it comes to families, when it comes to communicating with teachers? How, and I've seen both sides of this, right? I've seen parents express frustration at all the different technological tools they need to implement to communicate with whatever school or teacher. This is a tough thing now because there's so many forms of communication that we have.
Yeah, you know, for parents, adults who aren't in schools but are certainly in their own professions, just remember how difficult it is for them to roll out a new app and to roll out, you know, new tech in their own business, and how we've got to all catch up to that as quickly as we can, with the expectation that it always works 100% all the time. And then now that we've gotten those things, now we have to use them. So teachers are the same way. We've got to catch up on all the new stuff. But also they're being put in buildings that weren't really designed for those platforms. So little things like Wi-Fi, which we now have come to take, like everybody should have that, and it should always work and quickly. The other part of that is just the feeling that now you can get quick response from your kids' instructors. And we try to do everything we can to match with that. But yeah, I mean, we've got our own lives as well. So they kind of build back and forth on each other. And I would just say, you know, just have patience, the same way that anyone would want to have patience with you, you know, in your workplace, about getting back to you and making sure that everything works. Well, it, like most things in tech, it doesn't always work perfectly. So just, you know, relax a little bit.
Mike, to Mark's point, what do you think are realistic expectations for parents when it comes to communicating with teachers? What should parents keep in mind?
I think they should keep in mind that most teachers have about 130 kids they deal with on a daily basis. So anytime a parent wants to communicate with a teacher, they want the answer right away. And I know every teacher.
So
I
that
work
might
with,
be about 260 parents, is what you're saying.
Exactly, and you know they get back to them as soon as they possibly can, but it's not going to be like a an instantaneous response. Please be patient. There's a lot of a lot of kids we have to deal with, a lot of parents. So sometimes it's that time crunch that really hits.
Lindsay Jensen, beyond communication, when we think about how we can help kids do better in the classroom, what kind of messages would you like to see that need to be reinforced at home?
Well, I teach junior and senior English at Dwight Township High School. And with my students, I see there are two main things that come to mind. First off, as a society, we have kind of this conception about, this misconception, in my opinion, about failure. And I'm not talking about letter grades, but just failure in general. We shy away from it. We take it personally. And, you know, in classrooms, if we're not failing at things, we're not learning, we're not growing. So just this misconception that failure means we as people are failures. I want my kids to be challenged and to think critically and to be growing in my classroom and to feel empowered by that. Additionally, I would say that in this world where information can be spread instantly and the ability to share information is literally at their fingertips in this digital world, with my students at the high school level, preparing them for a world where they know how to accurately identify reputable sources. Because, you know, these kids that we're teaching today, they have grown up in a world in which computers have always existed. So undoubtedly that affects the way that they communicate, the ways in which they think, the ways that they live.
And Lindsay Dickinson, to that point, I wonder how social media presents an added challenge that wasn't there years ago, not just for students, but for parents and all the different Facebook groups. What advice do you have on that front?
Well, you know, I teach middle school, so eighth graders math. So eighth graders are still trying to figure out who they are as individuals. I would say that the biggest challenge is that, and what I tell people to do, is to make sure that you separate your personal life from your professional life. You know, we are looked at as educators as, you know, this gold, this white picket fence, and everybody loves their, you know, kindergarten teacher. And so we need to maintain that reputable, you know, source, but we also have lives. So being able to delineate the difference between your professional and your personal life is super helpful. I've seen on, you know, Facebook where parents or people in the community get super angry about something, and then they'll go on Facebook and blast this teacher. And it really then puts a dagger to your heart, because all teachers are in education because they love students, they love the content, and they want to make and help make students grow. And so we just have to get back to those roots. And when we have these daggers thrown at us, it's hard to do.
Yeah. Mike, what other advice do you have for parents when it comes to modeling good behavior for their kids for social media, other messages that you would like to see from a social media standpoint that are reinforced in home apart from school?
You know, I think part of the thing with social media is that the personal and the school now have merged, in that what happens in social media outside of school then comes back into the school with the phones and with the apps and so forth. So you're seeing a lot of a blending of the school climate plus the personal climate. And I think parents need to know that sometimes the school, it's very difficult for the school to get involved with some of the activities that take place outside of school, even though it's now having an impact on the school because of the social media effect. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a new thing that, you know, I've been teaching for 25 years. Within the last 5-6 years, the amount of personal impact that these students have to deal with, mainly around social media, and how that impacts the dynamic in the classroom is really enhanced.
Mm.
So for parents, you really need to know what your kids are doing on those social media apps. And I don't think, we hear stories of students being, you know, cruel and mean on social media, and some are. But I think sometimes students don't really think about it, and they do something, and it's being perceived as by many other people as being mean to their classmates. So parents need to really get actively engaged with their students or their kids at a very young age, and try to show them the impact that has on their classmates.
Mark, to Mike's point about outside the classroom, you also teach soccer at Parkland. I wondered if how much sympathy that gives you for kids who are so involved in extracurricular activities, they maybe have a hard time managing schoolwork or even sleep. And I wonder what advice you have for parents on how to juggle all of that.
Well, to the student athlete part, you know, I talk to my players all the time and high school kids as well about, you know, the social media imprint that you leave that pretty much is out there for everyone to see, and how that, you know, that decision of what you post, parents as well, you know, can impact your recruiting process and stuff like that. Yeah, as far as the time management stuff, you know, just to remind kids, and I think oftentimes students don't recognize how much time they spend on it until you actually ask them to break down minute by minute, hour by hour that you spent. And don't get me started on things like Fortnite. So, you know, just it feels like everything is on top of them at once, and you just cannot maximize who you are as a human being, and definitely as a student athlete, if you don't really take stock in that and inventory in that. What I worry about as a parent myself is that we've also, as adults, have sped ourselves up so much, and sometimes, many times, unknowingly. So we don't necessarily recognize it in our own kids, or if we do recognize it in our kids or our students, it's just like, well, that's just the way things are now. So we also, as adults, need to take, you know, a hard look at the life that we're leading and what we've created, because more often than not, you know, our students, our own kids are going to emulate those things.
Mm-hmm. We just have a couple minutes here, so I wanted to end by asking all of you all about what you think drives you crazy about teaching, or you can answer a positive way too. What's the most fun thing you're looking forward to this year? Lindsay Dickinson, let's start with you.
I would say fun thing. So I am starting in a new role this year. I am now going to be our union president. So I'm actually without students this year. I'm stepping away for a little while in order to see the impact of unionism with the staff and how that impacts student growth. So what I'm really excited about is being able to go back into a variety of classes. We're a K-12 district, and I've spent my life in middle school. So I'm excited to go back to like a kindergarten classroom where I haven't been since I was in kindergarten. So I think that's really what I'm looking forward to most, and I'm looking for, you know, all the fun things I get to do with in other people's classrooms.
Lindsay Jensen?
For me, it's just 100% engaging with my students. Teens get a bad rap as being jaded, but there's actually no other group of people whom I'd rather spend my day with. I miss them during the summer, greeting them at my door before each class period, laughing at spontaneous things that happen in the classroom, and just generally being a part of their daily lives. So I'm looking forward to helping them to feel empowered by their time in my classroom. I like them to feel heard and understood, and I just can't wait to see all my kids.
Mike Goodwin.
Same thing. I'm looking to, you know, reconnect with the students after summer and see what they've been up to and move forward. And, you know, one of the things I'm frustrated with, and I'm sure everybody shares this, is the safety thing, all the stuff we have to go through now, intruder drills, how to lock your door, what to throw at somebody if they come in. These things, you know, teachers, students shouldn't have to think about. But that's the most frustrating thing that I have to deal with.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. Mark, I wanted to end. We just have about a minute left, but I just wonder if you had one word of advice for parents for the next year, what would that word be?
One word. All right. Probably inquire. You know, inquire what goes on, what is going on in each of your students' classes. Inquire the material. Inquire what the situation is every day. And, you know, and I know the answers are going to be that one syllable, nothing or whatever, but just keep doing that.
Want parents to be asking their children.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. Just keep inquiring and do it in, you know, obviously they need to inquire with a school or a teacher, certainly do that in the proper and professional way, but just ask your kids what's going on.
Well, I appreciate all of you coming here to share some information with us. I know this is a really busy time of year for all of you. So I want to thank Mark Sikora with Centennial High School in Champaign. Mike Goodwin is at Williamsville High School near Springfield. Lindsay Jensen is at Dwight Township High School near Joliet, just south of Joliet and Dwight. Lindsay Dickinson is in Bloomington. Thank you all for being with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
And we've got lots more students actually in the control room right now. We have the first Lego team winning from Springfield that's going to be joining us next. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome. As students come back to school, for a lot of them, it also means a new season of activities of choice, whether it's basketball, dance, speech, or debate. We played that because for hundreds of teams across Illinois, it's a new season of the first Lego League. There are thousands of teams from all over the world, and what they do is get kids to think like scientists by working in teams to design robots that help solve real-life problems. The league is in its 30th season, and one of the best teams around is from Central Illinois. They were first founded 7 years ago, and they're comprised of students from different high schools. They also have a pretty unique name. They're called These Are the Droids You're Looking For. I'm joined in studio now by the coach of that team, Kyle Blay, along with three team members. Fiona Saray is entering seventh grade at Williamsville Junior High School. Orlando Saray is entering fifth grade at Isles Elementary. And Manu Mamilapalli is entering sixth grade at Franklin Middle School. Guys, thanks for being here with me. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Fiona, can I start with you? Can you explain how big is these Lego League competitions when you go? How many people are there?
Well, there are several different competitions. There is the qualifier, where there's around 16 or so teams. And then there is the state competition, where there's around...
How many teams are there, Kyle?
50 to 60 teams at one
okay.
of those.
Okay. And then when you get to the national championships, how many people are there?
A lot.
A lot. And what happens at these competitions? Do you guys come in with a plan of what you're going to build, Manu?
Yes, we come. We have some guidelines, and we have like three different parts, and we have a plan for each of them except for core values, which is kind of a spontaneous thing where we just where we're expected to do some activities as a team together.
Mm-hmm.
And
then I guess you get, how does this work, Kyle? Do they get graded on this, or how do the competitions work?
So at the competitions, there's judging in the three different areas, the three areas being robotics, a project, which is on a different topic each year, and then on the core values that Manu was just talking about. Fiona could probably tell you guys about the how the project judging works and how the theme works each year.
And before you tell us about how the project judging works, Fiona, do you come into the competition with already the idea? You guys have already been practicing what you're going to build and all of that?
Yes.
Okay. Orlando, how long does it take for you guys to decide that?
Well...
Do you think it takes more than... Like, is it something you all talk about for a long period of time?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it takes a couple of weeks or longer?
Usually, like, a couple weeks, maybe a month.
Okay. Fiona, how does the judging work?
Well, for project, each season there is a different theme. And this year's theme was Into Orbit, and the other programs have... space like, themes as well.
Right. So that's this year's theme. Last year, can you tell us about the theme? Was the theme water last year?
Yes.
And so you all built a robot that saves water?
We built a device for your shower that would save water.
And Manu, how did that work? Did you have to build it with Lego parts, or how do you build this device?
So the thing that the shower... The thing on your shower that saves water is actually part of the project.
The shower head.
Yeah.
Not
the shower head, but the thing that we...
That you built.
Uh-huh.
And so does it attach to a shower head?
So it's more of like just an idea. We don't actually have like It's an idea, and it was used in the project presentation because we have to solve a problem with an innovative solution, and that was our innovative solution.
Okay. So, Kyle, how does this work? Do they present, do they necessarily present a problem or a theme and say, you need to come up with, for like last year, for example, with water, do they say you need to come up with something that will help conserve water, or how does that work?
Well, there's the general theme is different each year, and the part that may get confusing for some people is that there are different parts. So it's first Lego League, but the Lego component is only for the robotics competition, which is different than the project each year. So, for instance, that means when you have last year when looking at water, you're not building something to save water out of Legos. You're looking really just using STEM concepts altogether to figure out a way, find a problem that people have with water. Last year was how we find water, use water, you know, what we do with water after we're done with it, and then, you know, how to improve that. This year it's on space and how to help astronauts who are traveling in space for long periods of time. So that's that part of First Lego League's not using Legos. That's just using, again, science, technology, engineering, mathematics to think about problems and to try to make the world a better place.
So that's Kyle Blay. He's the coach for the team. These are the droids you were looking for. We're talking about the First Lego team with team members Fiona Saray, her brother Orlando, and Manu Mamilipali as well. Fiona, how long have you been involved with this?
This is my fourth year.
Why did you first want to get involved with this?
Well, for one, it seemed like a lot of fun. And it was fun. You got to learn how to program and build robots. You could go all over the place. You could go to California or Decatur, Detroit. Just a lot of places, just in general.
And Manu, why did you want to get involved?
I really like the robotics component of it. I thought it was kind of fun that we got to build a robot out of Legos and that every year we would get to choose something to research and try and solve a problem in that area of research.
Orlando, are you excited about this year's theme being space?
Yeah, I am excited, and I think we'll get to learn a lot about the problems in space because I don't know that much.
Okay. And then you guys are going to have some really cool opportunities as well. Is there going to be, when you go to these competitions, is there going to be an astronaut at one of them, I heard?
There in Chicago, there is an international manufacturing technology show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the 15th, and all Illinois teams get to go there free. But there's going to be a few speakers, and one of them is Wendy Lawrence, Captain Wendy Lawrence. She's a astronaut who's been on 4 different spacecrafts, and she will be there to talk with us.
Yeah, Fiona, are you excited about that too?
Very.
Kyle, how much has Legoland grown in Illinois when you're thinking about Fiona's been a part of this team for a couple of years? Have we seen a lot of these teams springing up all across Illinois?
The program's really grown a lot. This last season, we had 37 qualifiers throughout the state of Illinois, and around 600 teams were registered in Illinois. I know when I first started coaching 7 or 8 years ago, I think we had around 200 to 300 teams in the whole state. And I know there were no qualifiers in Springfield and Decatur, and, you know, there's one in Champaign. But, you know, like I said, now we've got them all over the state. It's really grown tremendously.
And how big is the team that you coach?
The team I coach this year has 7 students on it. Teams have to have between anywhere from 2 to 10 students on them.
Mm-hmm. And is one part of this that you guys like, Manu, I wonder, is it cool that you get to spend time with students at other schools in Springfield?
Yeah, I think that's kind of cool to, and it's, I like Lego League a lot because I also get to make friends, and it's like really fun to work on something that's not a school project with people who have different learning methods and like different ways of doing stuff.
Yeah, and problem solving, right? Orlando, is this something that you wanted to do even though your sister was involved with it?
Yeah, I did, and I really liked that I could learn about building the robot and programming it, and I thought that was really fun.
Would you guys have an idea of what you want to study in college or do? Do you have any thoughts on that? Not yet. That's okay. You have plenty of time. You don't necessarily have to have an idea yet. Kyle, what does the season look like this year? In terms of what is the kickoff the first event that we were just talking about in Chicago on September 15th?
So the season officially started on August 1st. And so the materials are all out there, but really teams are just getting going now. So teams really are just starting to register now, get the information. And then basically in late November and December, we'll be having our qualifying events and the tournaments here in Illinois. And then at the end of January, there will be the state championship events. And about 25% of the teams from the qualifiers advance on to the state championships.
All right. Well, we will be rooting for you guys to go back again to the national championships this year. I want to thank Kyle Blay for being with us. He's the coach of the team. These are the droids you're looking for. Fiona and Orlando Saray are also with us, along with Manu Mamilipali. Thanks for being with me, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
If you open the op-ed pages of your local newspaper tomorrow, odds are you're going to be reading about the power of a free press. More than 200 American newspapers have heeded a call from the Boston Globe to publish editorials promoting journalism. This is following President Trump's increasingly hostile language towards journalists, calling us the enemy of the people, among other things. And what began with the Boston Globe now includes groups like the American Society for Newspaper Editors and the largest paper in Illinois, the Chicago Tribune. The Peoria Journal-Star is also one of many other Illinois papers running editorials. Its executive editor, Dennis Anderson, is on the line with me now from the newsroom. Hi, Dennis. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you very much.
So the Globe said the impact of the president's assault on journalism looks different in Boise than, say, that Boston. And they said it would be clear that all of the newspaper editorials would have different words, but the words would reflect a sense of alarm about these attacks. Do you feel like they – why did you want to take part in this?
I think it's important for us to I think journalists maybe are more talking about the stories that we're learning about and that we're sharing, and we don't talk about ourselves much, or at least with the work that we're doing, the important work that we're doing. And I think it's now's the time for us to go back with this target on our back to say we're important, and we need to protect the press and what we do. How we serve our communities.
Dennis, you've spent your entire career in community newspapers. Does what's happening now feel different to you?
I don't recall any other time in my 33 years in this business where I felt the president himself has been attacking us at this. I don't recall any other time in that time.
So that said, what message do you want your readers to hear?
The message I think is important is local news is important, and we need to make sure that we're out there telling our stories, that we're the community's watchdog, and that we're able to do it using the freedom of information and the First Amendment. And we need to make sure that we're protecting that. And I think one of the things that concerns me is earlier this month, there was a survey that came out that up to a third of our American people who were interviewed in for the poll said that the media is – they agree with the president that the media is the enemy of the American people. Well, if you get to know us and you know who we are and you've been a subscriber for many years, you know that's not true. But we've got a third of the readers who are responders to this who are saying that it is.
Do you think the president's rhetoric has affected responses you're getting from your community in Peoria?
I think some there's a few people that are regular send me emails regularly or I get a phone call who you could always tell when there's something happening on a conservative newspaper or a news site that are telling people, contact your local editor and tell them about it and tell them why you're upset about something or that they need to be less critical of the president. You could tell when that's happening in a way that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that wasn't happening. then that's fine. You know, Eddie, pick up the phone call, pick up the call, and call us. We'll talk to anybody. We'll talk to all of our readers and send me an email. We'll respond. But I think people have to realize that we're not the enemy. We're actually the people who are there to help protect them and keep them informed.
Not just in the Peoria Journal Star, the State Journal Register, lots of papers throughout Illinois are going to be running special editorials tomorrow talking about freedom of the press. I want to thank Executive Editor of the Peoria Journal Star, Dennis Anderson, for giving us a little preview of what's going to be in their paper tomorrow. Dennis, thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you.
That does it for us today. Tomorrow we're going to be broadcasting live from the State Fair in Springfield. I am excited about all the food. We're also going to be talking to lots of other folks who are there. And if you're around, come by at 11. We're going to be broadcasting from the Ag Tent. You can always go to our website, 21stshow.org, for more information on how to contact us. We are a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. See you at the State Fair tomorrow. I'm Nyla Boodoo.